Hello and welcome to Cooper Talks UK, a series of podcasts designed to help students of A-level politics in the UK and for anyone who's generally interested about understanding some of the aspects of UK politics in the world. Now, the first episode that we're doing today is going to look at the state of UK elections, taking a look at the idea of first past the post, the problems and issues with elections, why we're in the situation we are in, whether or not any of the concerns about the UK elections matters, and if there's any hope for the future. So let's start by looking at the current situation in UK elections. And the first thing to remember is, actually, for a modern democracy, the UK has more opportunities than it's ever had before to participate and vote. Yes, the general election tends to be the famous one every 5 years. But since 1997, a whole wave of new elections have come in. We've got elections for the European Parliament. We've got elections to the London Mayor and to the Greater London Assembly. We've got elections in Wales and Scotland, a whole host of local mayors who get elected to office, as well as referendums on whether or not to have these mayors. We've got police crime commissioner elections. So in terms of having the opportunity to participate, Britons have more opportunity than they have ever had before. And actually, the British have more representation than they've ever had before. And in a modern representative democracy, you could argue that that's an amazing thing and one of the most significant changes since 1997. Added with this, we have more accountability than ever before, more opportunity to hold a particular party to account at different levels. We've also had opportunities to get rid of elected politicians who've maybe not performed as we like and to show our disapproval. And tied in with all this extra participation and representation, we've actually got more choice than ever before, certainly more realistic choice, where we see elected members from a whole host of what we'd call minority parties in the past, gaining elected office. We've also, in a sense, as a result of all this, got more democracy than ever before. But is that necessarily a good thing? Because in many ways, what this has led to is a great deal of confusion, people being perplexed or disorientated by the vast amount of elections that we have, bewildered by the choices, in some cases confused, and more often than not, leading to apathy, as people can't really be bothered to participate in yet another election for another office they don't really know about or think is that important. So, who cares? Who cares about this and is it important? Well, let's think about turnouts. Are people going out to vote? Remember, this is fundamentally important for any representative democracy. Are the people going to vote? If we look at general elections, actually Britain's fairly healthy. Okay, it's maybe not at the 80-odd percent that we had back in the 1940s and 50s, certainly not the 70% that we had in the 80s and 90s. But in 2010, turnout was about 65%, and in 2015, it was about 66%. This is not too dissimilar from other modern countries, particularly America, but also looking at some of the continental democracies. Actually, the turnout in general elections is reasonably healthy. What's perhaps more concerning is if we go below that. Now, the EU election in 2014 and the last Scottish Parliament election, which was back in 2009, both saw turnouts of about 50%. Now, these are major and important elections, and yet, it's only half the electorate eligible to vote are turning out to vote. That's a bit more of a worry. And actually, it's worth bearing in mind that in both those elections, those were significant rises from the past. Previously, the Scottish Parliament had seen a turnout of about 42%. If we look at the local council elections that were recently held in England, we got a turnout of 36%. Now, bearing in mind that most of the things that affect people on a day-to-day basis are run by the local council, 36%, just over a third of possible voters actually voting, is a worrying state of affairs for local councils. It gets even worse with police crime commissioners, where we saw in the Rotherham by-election after the scandal that hit there over the paedophile rings, a turnout of 14%. And it was as low as about 8% in the original 2012 elections. So nationally, general elections have a decent and reasonably healthy turnout. But below that, turnout is not so good in the UK. So why are we in this situation? Well, one argument is that we've had an increase in partisan realignment. As people are becoming less loyal to the two main parties and aren't feeling as tribal in some ways, they're not bothering to turn out. People might not particularly support the current government. They might not be ardent Conservative voters, but that doesn't mean they're necessarily willing to go and vote for one of the alternative parties. So people are beginning to feel a bit more bit less engaged, and therefore not that interested in participating. We've also had an increase in lack of trust in politicians. Now, there's always been question marks, but certainly, probably since the 70s, trust in politicians has been declining. The expensive scandal really damaged many MPs and the reputation of Parliament as a whole. And although the main wave of that was in 2009-2010 with the famous duck moats and hobnobs, it hasn't really stopped. Still, cases of corruption come up. New story today, although not necessarily corruption, but of bullying by party officials. The Chris Huhne affair, allegations of inappropriate expenses or working with people that you shouldn't. These things erode trust in politicians. There's also a lot of confusion over what exactly you're voting for. In the general election, people at least have an idea you're voting for the government. But for many of the others, they don't really see why they have to do it. And even some confusion about how to vote, as we saw in Scotland in 2009, when the STV voting system caused a horrendous amount of confusion and a lot of spoiled votes. That lack of understanding triggers a lack of interest in the issues. And some of these issues, while being very, very important, are not exciting or sexy issues. Going to war or fantastic initiatives for the NHS, these are dramatic and exciting things. Immigration and the EU, people get excited about these. Road paving or the powers of police crime commissioners, they're not the most exciting thing. They're not going to fire up an electorate in the same way that, say, a vote on Scottish independence would. There's also seen a lot of pointlessness. Is the role of a police crime commissioner really making any difference to the way things were done before? It might be more democracy, might be more accountability. But isn't this just a huge expense for no real benefit? People are seeing these as pointless elections and a waste of time and voting with their feet, if you'll pardon the slight pun there. Also, society's changing. And it's perhaps that the parties haven't really realigned to that changing nature. Although there are many people in the UK that are would consider themselves working class, we're not the industrial society we were in the past. We don't have cohesive communities anymore. Society does not really revolve around sort of pubs and the local clubs in the way that it used to. It's much more individualistic, much more centred on the home rather than the community. And that changing society has meant there's been less engagement in the surrounding areas, in civic participation, and in getting involved in the community. Within all that, there's also been a change in attitudes. People in the UK have become much more used to instant gratification. You can see this in some ways, that with the access of credit, you don't have to save up to get something. You can just buy it and then pay off the debt. We're also used to now shopping on, say, Amazon or eBay or iTunes. And instead of having to wait until you had an opportunity to get to the shops, you can just click a button and download a book or a song straight away, or it can be delivered to your door within 24 hours. So we're not used to the idea of waiting, and this causes disillusionment with politicians. A lot of what politicians and the government are trying to achieve, or any local council are trying to achieve, will take time. You can't just wave a magic wand and suddenly the roads outside will be free of potholes, and you can't just magic a whole wave of new doctors and nurses into the NHS, and the economy's not going to improve within a couple of weeks. And yet we've come to expect that in our day-to-day society, and we're coming to expect it from our politicians. Now, that expectation in itself isn't necessarily bad. The problem is, in order to win votes, politicians are often promising instant gratification when we can't be given instant gratification. Things aren't that simple and can't be achieved that quickly. There's also the issue of slacktivism. And this is a term to describe the idea that people feel they're engaging in politics simply by clicking like on a Facebook page, or maybe forwarding a news article, or resending a tweet, or posting a comment on a tweet or on a website. And while that is a form of activism, you are doing something, it is active, it's not really causing the in-depth engagement that, say, going on a protest march or going around giving out flyers on a cold Saturday morning will do. So while we've had this rise in potential political activism in the UK, because things have become much easier thanks to the internet, it's very much been at a surface level, and we don't have people engaging in politics or becoming party activists with a deep, entrenched sense of loyalty to a particular group that we may have done in the past. A good example of that might be going back to the Ice Bucket Challenge, where thousands upon thousands of people took part in the Ice Bucket Challenge, but very few people seem to actually remember what the point of it was, and people were doing it and taking part, so they were active, but not actually for the intended purpose. In the same way, if you've gone around the streets knocking on people's doors, giving out flyers, campaigning for a party, you're going to have a much deeper sense of loyalty towards that party than if you, say, just forwarded an email or a tweet from David Cameron or Ed Miliband or Jeremy Corbyn, as it might be, to all the people in your inbox. You know, you're not going to have that level of loyalty or engagement from the work you've done. And that's meant, while we're more active in the UK, we're less deeply engaged in things. And tied in with that is the idea of hyperpluralism. Go back 30 or 40 years, and there were very few issues that people really thought about in terms of politics. It was about the economy, unemployment, maybe social services and welfare. And that really was, for most people, the main issue. You know, jobs, the home, national security. There weren't as many issues to get bothered about. But in the last 20 or 30 years, we've seen a huge rise in the number of campaigns, immigration campaigns, environmentalism, and obviously the counter campaigns against them, campaigns for and against smoking, regional devolution, globalisation, anti-capitalism. Ideas that aren't necessarily new, but in terms of becoming major political issues, have become much more prevalent. And again, thanks to the internet, it's easy. Any issue that you could possibly want to find out about, you can find out about. And if you wanted to, set up your own pressure group or campaign online. So there's a vast, vast amount of political options out there now. But actually, having that much choice isn't necessarily a good thing. This hyper-pluralism can actually terrify people or put people off dipping their toe into the murky world of politics. And so it can have a negative effect and lead to people actually not wanting to go and vote. And if we apply hyperpluralism to the parties, if you were to say the choice was, as for many people it was, even just 30 years ago, between Conservative or Labour, you have a nice clear yes or no choice. But now the politics is more confusing. Conservative, Labour, SNP, Lib Dems, UKIP, Green Party, Plaid Cymru, and many, many other parties. So who do you vote for, and how do you make your vote count? All these things have led to the confusion that's in many ways led to a decline in public participation. But does it matter? Does it matter that at many levels people aren't turning out to vote? Well, yes, in many ways it does. Obviously, elected politicians raise taxes, they spend public money, and they need to be legitimately elected. Now, the Conservative Party, say, is legally elected. They won the general election, they got a majority. By the UK's rules, they were legally elected. But can they really claim legitimacy when about 36% of the UK population actually voted for them? which means about 64% did not vote for them. So in the decisions they make, can they claim a real legitimate mandate? Of course they can. Legally, that's how the political system works. So they have the power and the authority. But it raises questions over the validity of what they do and is a concern to politicians as well as to ordinary people. Obviously, in terms of democracy, it's a huge issue. If people aren't engaging, then the people aren't exercising their rights and their responsibilities to govern themselves. And the whole point of democracy is people representing themselves, choosing their elected leaders and governing themselves. And if people aren't taking that responsibility by casting a vote, then society doesn't function and we lose a sense of democracy and potentially can end up with a tyranny of a minority in an elected sphere. You also get the idea of civic pride. If you're not participating in elections and getting involved, then chances are you're not taking pride in the community around you. You're not, if you like, doing your bit or engaging with the people around you and getting involved. And that links into the idea of social identity and responsibility. People used to go to party clubs and party memberships, but that's declined. And also voting, it's not just a right, it is a responsibility. As well as having the right to choose the government, it is a responsibility to exercise that right. And if you're not doing that, it can have implications for your sense of responsibility and how people interact in society. So people that bemoan the idea of a breakdown in modern society, that people aren't taking responsibility and are expecting other people to do things for them, might be able to point to voting and say, well, look, if you're not even bothered to vote, how can you take responsibility for the welfare of the community and looking after your neighbours and each other? So those would be arguments that suggest, well, actually the low turnouts are serious. But what about the flip side? Does it really matter? In some ways, no. In Britain, works. It maybe doesn't work as well as people would perhaps like. People are always wanting things to be better. But the economy is progressing. Although unemployment is higher than anyone would like, it is working. The NHS is functioning. Schools are educating children. There is a police force. The country works, and certainly in global standards, you know, works pretty well. Of course, there are countries doing better, and there's always room for improvement. But if the country's working, does it matter if turnout's low? What about the people? Okay, there are lots of people who aren't happy about the current situation, either about the state of the economy or unemployment or tax cuts, and that's absolutely understandable. But by and large, the people are mostly content. There aren't huge rebellions and revolts on the streets. There aren't armed attempts to take over the government in Britain. Whatever discussions or issues come up do go through the democratic process. There isn't a civil war to try and get Scotland to break away and become independent. It was done through the democratic process. So although turnout might not be high, there isn't really any demand or sense of anger from the people. Certainly not enough to push them into a huge revolt or rebellion, as we perhaps saw in the late 80s with the poll tax riots. So although people aren't necessarily happy, they are at least mostly content in the UK. And yes, the economy is an issue, but again, in modern politics, there aren't quite the major issues that are causing these huge divisions between the parties. So it doesn't matter that there's low turnout. There isn't a major issue that people are gathering around. There are important issues, but nothing fundamental to the way the UK will work. And by and large, the people are content with it. People aren't screaming for change. They're not screaming out for a presidential system or a communist system or anything really. EU is a major issue, but by and large, people are happy with the system. No one's trying to abolish Parliament, or if they are, it's very small groups. There's no massive campaigns even now to get rid of first past the post. By and large, people are going along and it's, you know, people have a right to vote. And if they're happy, they have a right not to vote if they so wish. So maybe it doesn't matter in that sense. Of course, that's sort of a negative look. But there is hope that turnout may well increase. Now, though I'm looking at elections, it's worth also considering the Scottish referendum. And that gives us a lot of hope for the future. On a major issue like independence, people will get engaged. The people of Scotland were discussing it. Yes, there were arguments in pubs, but that's the joy of politics. Arguments and discussions at the family dinner table. And on a really important issue, something that really inspires and motivates people for or against it, then turnout will be high. That's why the Scottish referendum saw a turnout of about 88-89%. Much higher than in any of the general elections since after World War II. And that's because it was a hugely important issue. But not only was it a hugely important issue, it became a close decision. And that will motivate people to go out and vote. In Scotland, people who were opposed to independence became fearful that if they didn't go out and vote, Scotland would break away from the UK, and that inspired them to vote. Equally, a lot of people who might have apathetically supported the idea of Scottish independence but thought, oh, it's never really going to happen, when they realised it was close and their vote might matter, they were inspired and forced to go out and vote. So that raised the bar. Now, when there's, you know, when people don't think it matters, or if it's going to be a clear one-sided victory, then they're not likely to go out and vote because they won't see it as important. And the other advantage of the Scottish referendum was the immediacy of the result. People knew they'd get the result very quickly. It was exciting. There was the news programmes. And again, that's what sort of gets people motivated and out there. And beyond anything, the media engagement. The media really whipped up a frenzy across the whole of the UK, not just in Scotland. And that fed the cycle. People certainly knew it was going on and were excited about that. And the media fed the cycle of gaining, of promoting it and getting people involved and excited or fearful and terrified of what might happen. But the media played an important role in engaging people in a way that, say, they didn't in the Police Crime Commissioner elections, where it seemed to go pretty much unnoticed in the local press, even in the national press. So those give us factors for, well, actually the British people, certainly the Scottish, but if we scale it out to the British people, they will turn out to vote if they think it's going to matter and if it's on an important issue. Now, if you're studying politics, you'll probably have to study elections, and one of the classic ones is, should the Westminster electoral system be reformed? Certainly there are problems with first past the post as it's used in the UK. And so looking at those, let's look at those as issues. Well, issues like wasted votes or safe seats are seriously a problem. And if we were to adopt a new system, perhaps a proportional system like party list or SDV, or even a majoritarian system like AV or SV, well, it might reduce that problem. They may alleviate some of the wasted votes. They may reduce the number of safe seats and make for more competition. So that might help improve UK general elections. If you introduce another reform, say compulsory voting, as they have in Australia and Belgium, and say that people have to pay a fine if they don't go out and vote in any election, then that may well get more people to vote, and that will probably improve turnout. Certainly worked in Australia. If there were greater political education in the UK, that might help create some more awareness and get more people aware of what's going on and get them more engaged. And if we did lower the voting age to 16, well, it might make some 16 or 17-year-olds feel more valued and engage more in the democratic process. And of course, in terms of representation, it would mean more people are being represented. So, yeah, there are problems with first past the post in general elections, and some of those problems might be alleviated by potential reforms. But you can only lead a horse to water. You cannot make it drink. You could change the electoral system in the UK. You could replace first past the post with those alternative voting systems. And yes, that might reduce the number of wasted votes. It might reduce the number of safe seats. It might mean people are more willing to go out and vote. But if it were true, why don't people vote more in the elections where these alternative systems are already used? If closed party list and a proportional system reducing wasted votes was the answer to low turnouts in general elections, why was turnout only 50% in the last European parliamentary election? Surely if the voting system was what was putting people off, turnout would be much higher. If AMS is the perfect alternative, Why was turnout pretty low in the Welsh Assembly and only 50% in the Scottish Parliament? If supplementary voting and creating majoritarian constituencies was the answer, why was it as low as 18% in the turnout for the police crime commissioners? Which tends to suggest that the problem isn't the voting system. The voting system may alleviate, or a voting system may alleviate some problems, but that's not the issue, because it's certainly not the case at those lower level elections. Equally, compulsory voting, yes, it will force a higher turnout, and that will artificially glamorise it, and we might be able to, like Australia, say, look, 96% turnout. But just because you forced someone to vote rather than pay a fine does not mean they're actually engaged in the political debate. They might just be voting as a joke or in protest. They might tick the box, wasted, none of the above, or they might spoil their ballots, or they might vote for joke parties and outsiders. It's no guarantee of actually getting people to engage and participate in politics. Equally, if we were to lower the voting age to 16, well, if the lowest voting demographics in every election are the 18 to 24-year-olds, how extending the vote to 16-year-olds will improve turnout is a mystery. Even in the Scottish independence, where 16-year-olds were given the right to vote, they were at the lower end of turnout. So it's certainly not going to boost the overall turnout. And there may be a sense of novelty the first time round. But beyond that, is that going to increase turnout? The evidence would actually suggest it's probably going to lower turnout by extending the vote to 16-year-olds, because they're less likely to actually go and vote. And we've had a process of greater education in schools with citizenship and promotion of British values, as we now have in UK schools. But that, again, just because you're more educated doesn't mean you're going to become more engaged in the system. So these arguments about reform, they may solve some of the problems, but they're not likely, looking at the evidence, to actually get to the root of the problem. And the root of the problem isn't with the electoral systems, and in a sense it's not really with the politicians, although they don't always help matters. And it's also not necessarily with the media. Now, taking a slightly controversial line here, it's the problem of the great British electorate. The British electorate are very keen and very aware of their rights, and their right to participate in the political system. But equally, I think the modern British population isn't as good as it perhaps was in the past at realising it's got this responsibility to take part. And this is perhaps best exemplified by Russell Brand and his idea that the politicians aren't any good, so the way to teach them a lesson is to not vote, and arguing that not voting is the way to show your discontent with the system. Now, all that would really do, if it was taken to a logical conclusion, is mean that the politicians would win by basically voting for themselves. But they still have the power over us. And then they'd have no incentive to change. If you want to change something, if you are genuinely unhappy with the system, you actually need to be going and putting pressure on the politicians. And you don't do that in speeches or protests, although those are important messages of protest to show your opinion. But if you really want to put pressure on, it has to be at the ballot box. That's when politicians are most likely to listen. So if you want to change the elected leaders, if you want to change the image of a party or change the nature of government, you need to find a way of getting the British people to actually participate, to actually go and vote. If there is lower turnout, politicians just won't listen to the electorate and they will carry on doing their own thing. Changing the electoral system isn't going to solve the answer. And the politicians will only change if there is pressure on them exerted by the electorate. And the time they can do that most effectively is in elections. So the British need to, as a whole, the population needs to recognise this, and actually needs to start participating, not waiting for someone else to make the system better, or hoping that by ignoring things and complaining about things, the political system will suddenly miraculously change everything and everyone will be wealthier and society will be better and more cohesive. It comes from self-awareness and civic responsibility. So really, and this is something worth bearing in mind about the idea of democracy and participation in the UK and the role of elections, it's got to come from the British people. Changing the systems, changing the rules about how to vote and the way we vote, they might change things at the periphery. But the core problem is people aren't willing to really put themselves out there and campaign and fight for something. When they are, as the Scottish referendum showed, when it is a big issue that will engage them, they will go out and participate. They will go and vote. They will campaign. But by and large, the British people, other than maybe in the general elections, they will not get involved. They don't see it as important. And that's fine. But democratically, the British public will be ignoring their responsibility. And the system itself won't change. And it doesn't matter how you tinker with the system. Until you've got the British public engaged in some really big issues, turnout will tend to be low. And if the British public as a whole really do want to change the political landscape, then they need to be much more vocal and active about that and put pressure on at the ballot box. So those are some thoughts that you can use in any future essays when considering democracy and participation or the role of elections and the need or nature of electoral reform. And you may agree with some of those points, you may disagree, but the important thing is be aware of some of the arguments and try to use them to develop your thinking and give you a greater range of assessed arguments that will help you get to the top levels and really achieve your full potential in exams. So I hope that's been useful and helpful, and I'll be back in a week or so with another episode on an aspect of UK politics. Thank you very much for listening.